This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
And Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Monday morning to you. It is Wake Up Call, the SportsNap Radio Network. Coming up, we'll talk PGA Championship. Colin Morikawa, the winner by two at Harding Park in San Francisco. We're still not sure if college football is going to be up and running. Power Five conferences in discussions. How did we get here? We'll talk about that coming up this hour as well. And the St. Louis Cardinals have not played baseball in like 3 weeks or 2 weeks, whatever it is. They haven't played since July. We'll talk about whether or not Major League Baseball has to step in for a team that has missed a lot of games, including this whole weekend against the Cubs and this upcoming series against the Pirates. We're going to start with the PGA Championship. Colin Morikawa winning that at, again, Harding Park, 23 years old. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know who he was, and I you know, kind of jumped on and found out he had won earlier this season. A young kid, played at Cal, was a Southern California kid, now living in Las Vegas. A solid player. And here was the thing, and doing a little bit of research on him, even though he's young and hasn't been on tour very long, he got a lot of rave reviews from the veterans on tour who said, oh my God, I played with this kid once. I played with this kid when he was an amateur. It's, I mean, the list of people that had great things to say about this kid's game came out of the woodwork. But we've seen this kind of thing before, where we've seen a young golfer win a major. We don't know where his trajectory is going to be. We don't know if this is a one-and-done thing, if he wins 10. We have no idea, because we've seen many golfers go down this road, especially at the PGA Championship, where if you go look at the list of people who have won this championship in the past, some of them you've never heard from again. But there's a lot of optimism on this kid and his ability. I say this because, and I'll repeat this later on, I think his shot at 16, the drivable par 4, is one of the greatest clutch shots I have ever seen. It is a driver to a par 4, he lands it within 7 feet and makes eagle. It's one of the greatest clutch, I guess, eagle approaches I've ever seen, to be on that tee, trying to hit it that close to get some scoring. We'll talk more about what the PGA Championship will mean to him and what happened to Jordan Spieth's golf game. Plus, what did Tiger do this weekend? It's all coming up as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Jay Farner here.
At the SportsMap Radio Network, we wear Boomer Naturals masks. Order now at BoomerNaturals.com. Use promo code SportsMapRadio for 20% off. Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. You can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Or if you'd like to telephone the program, 800-224-2004. That's 800-224-2004. All right, Colin Morikawa is your winner of the PGA Championship yesterday. A golf course that looked really good on TV. I was very impressed. This is a municipal course that was built in the 20s. I mean, 100 years ago. They really had it prepared for a major championship, which for a muni is not easy to do. Even if it's a high-end municipal course, when you have a lot of traffic and you get at public golf courses, it's very difficult to get a course like that into really, really great shape. A lot of times when the tour goes to these clubs, like these country clubs, you know, the club is okay with shutting down play from its members. The members are going to make a lot of money. The tour is going to be playing at Brookline or these other places, and so they don't get a lot of traffic. And they get the course in excellent condition. They did the same here, but it's a little bit more difficult to do that on a municipal course and then to get it prepared like they did. And I think they did a magnificent job. It looked great. And the wind coming off the water really made it challenging. But Morikawa, as I said earlier, I think hits one of the greatest shots in major championship golf history with his drive on the 16th hole, a drivable par 4 that lands to about 7 feet, in which he makes the putt for eagle. He was 11 under at the time. He's in this battle with Dustin Johnson and Paul Casey. Matthew Wolf is posted a number at 10. You listen, is he expected to make birdie there? Could he have laid up with a 3-iron and still made birdie? Of course. But when to kind of be in this dogfight and look for a place to separate yourself, where that is a scoring hole. That is where you've got to get your number. A par is like a double bogey there. You got to make birdie. If you make eagle, God bless you. I mean, that's even better. But he goes up there with driver in hand. Now look, if the average golfer goes out and drives a par 4, a drivable par 4, a lot of times it's like, hey, I've had buddies who've done this, where they just took a driver and swung the hell out of it and it landed on the green. You know, you don't worry about aiming it or trajectory or how the ball flight's going to be. He's got all of that into consideration. He's not just taking his driver out and saying, I'm going to hit it and hope to God it lands into the pin. He's aiming for the flagstick. He is adjusting everything at that moment to hit the right shot with his driver 296 yards to land exactly where it landed and roll to the cup. He's not just hitting and hoping. And that it's a clutch moment. I mean, to me, I tried to think about the best eagles that I've seen, like at the Masters on like 15 or 13, some other, you know, at Baltusrol, they have a long hole on 17 that you can try to drive, get an eagle at. I couldn't remember one as big as that shot that he hit at 16. It is not a wedge hole out from 90 yards, your third shot into a par 5, or driving a par, you know, getting to a par 5 and 2. I mean, this guy is on the tee, and he lands his driver shot within 7 feet of the cup. I mean, I watched it 3 or 4 times, just because I thought it was something that's going to be memorable. I hope this kid has that kind of career. I'll tell you a quick story. Back in 2003, Sean McKeel won the PGA Championship. He beat Chad Campbell in a playoff. These two guys have sort of disappeared into golf history. McKeel beat Chad Campbell. I think actually, I'm sorry, not in a playoff, but beat him on the 18th hole. He hit a 7-iron to like inches on the last hole, almost holed out from the fairway to win the PGA Championship. That shot is still brought up as one of the greater shots in golf, even though McKeel's career has gone really nowhere in terms of majors. I hope that Morikawa has the kind of career where this becomes part of the legend of this kid. He wins 4 or 5 majors, has a standing career, and this is one of the moments. Like Mickelson shot from the trees at 13 at Augusta, or a number of other shots that we've seen that have just blown our mind. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was incredible. And to come up with that at that moment of the golf tournament, again, it's a jumbled leaderboard, and at the time, it had some serious name power to it. I mean, Dustin Johnson's up there. Jason Day is up there. Bryson is up there. You've got Tony Finau, who's ready to burst at any moment and win some majors. Matthew Wolf is a young kid who's 21 years old, who's got some serious game. He's got, you know, he, like I said, he's shot 65. He's in the clubhouse at 10 under. And for Morikawa to knock that stiff on 16 and then to play the way he did down the stretch is, again, I hope it has that kind of staying power, because I thought it was an absolute remarkable shot. As far as some other notables in this field, Jordan Spieth, is the one that I kind of want to get to. I talked about it last week. I said, this is a guy who won three major championships before the age of 23. He won back-to-back majors in 2015. He won the Masters and the U.S. Open. 2 years later, he won the British Open and needs a PGA championship to complete the career Grand Slam, which is very, very difficult to do. There are plenty of golfers who do not have a career Grand Slam. Arnold Palmer, for example, does not have the career Grand Slam. Sam Snead, I don't think, has the career Grand Slam either. I think he's missing a U.S. Open. Phil Mickelson doesn't have a career Grand Slam. He's missing a U.S. Open. Very, very few golfers have won all four majors in their career. He's a PGA championship away from doing that, and likely at some point will probably get it. I don't know when, but he'll probably get it. But I found an interesting article because I figured out where has he gone. He has not won a tournament, any tournament, anywhere in the world at all since 2017, since he won the British Open. He has been winless for over 3 years now. So I started wondering, and I found this great article that David Duval was influential in this. And David Duval was a former number one, and he told Jordan Spieth, he said, Jordan, don't chase distance. Whatever you do, don't chase distance. Because guys out here are slamming this ball. I mean, they are drilling this thing, 330, 340. It is, these are numbers that just weren't on the table a couple of years ago. And Jordan Spieth is not one of those long hitters. He just isn't. And what Duval's point was, if you chase distance, if you go after that long ball, you're going to lose your game. You're going to lose some rhythm or some comfortability in your game. And that appears to be what happened to Jordan Spieth. Tiger Woods had a ho-hum tournament. He didn't really do anything awesome. He didn't do anything spectacular. But nobody thought he would. And this is the thing about where Tiger is right now. He's only played in one other tournament besides this one since golf's comeback from the shutdown in March. He played the Memorial. He didn't do well there either. He shot a one under par total for the tournament, shot a 67 on Sunday. Was never really in this thing, was never really high on the leaderboard. But as I said earlier, nobody thought he would be because of his inaction in tournament golf. Look, everybody said the same exact thing. I was guilty of it too when I said, look, you never bet against Tiger Woods. Never bet against Tiger Woods. And that's very true. But at the same time, we have reached a point where this guy is not just going to show up and beat these guys just by being there. Those days are over. They're long over. I mean, if he's going to win these tournaments, he's got to go out there and shoot some scores. And even when he does shoot scores, no one's afraid of him anymore. That's very clear. I mean, Colin Morikawa is 23. Matthew Wolf is 21. I mean, we talk about Tiger's decline going back to about 2009, 2010, right? I mean, Matthew Wolf was 11 when that was occurring. I mean, you think he's like going to go to a golf tournament and be afraid of a 41-year-old legend? Absolutely not.
Well, he probably grew up playing the video game.
He probably grew up playing the video game is right. Right? I mean, but I don't even know. Maybe not. I mean, when did the Tiger Woods game disappear? Because after that Ellen thing, I think they cut ties with him.
That's
true. In 2011 or 12.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, then he had to play retro.
Maybe he played retro games. Right. Right. So that's where we are with Tiger. If Tiger wins a few more majors, we're going to sit back and enjoy him. But he is not a favorite going into these things. I mean, listen, I said this at the top. Colin Morikawa wins this PGA Championship. Now, maybe other golfers were saying nice things about him because he won the major championship. But the praise for this guy's game, I mean, everybody had something positive to say. Everybody was saying how this is a box of talent ready to be open. Like, he's going to explode. And maybe this is it. But we've heard this before. I know. I'm not naive to know. We've heard this many times, and the guys disappear. But
that's Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, that's Jordan Spieth.
I mean, you know, when he came on, everyone was like, oh, my God. You know, and we were all quick to anoint him as the next Tiger because of that. You know, he had one magical year. And
we've been doing
that
with Rory. Rory hasn't won a major since 2014.
Yeah. We kind of overlook him.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's again, if this kid explodes, this shot he hit on 16 will be part of the incredible legacy.
That'll be his highlight reel.
Unreal.
Now, do you think that's a little bit of...
I'm watching it now. I still can't believe it.
Do you think he had a little bit of home course advantage?
Oh, because he's played there before going to Berkeley?
Probably.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe. But that course, they said, listen, even if he did, the course was never that tough and the tees were never that far back when he would play there at Berkeley. But still, you know, you get to know the layout. You get to know the design.
But, I mean, that 16, you just keep reliving it over and over. I mean, it was like he was throwing a dart.
Yeah.
At a dartboard, and he just knew exactly where he wanted to go. And, I mean, what, 6 feet, 7 feet from the pin?
Well, this is where I think golf can go. Look, I mean, we talk about, and there's a real discussion about the length of these guys and
when you have that kind of length, what does it, how does it annihilate these golf courses? But the reality of it is that par is just a number in a tournament. It really, in the end, doesn't matter if Morikawa was 13 under or 21 under or 15 under or 9 under or 3 under. He's in a tournament. I mean, that we need a way to score. That way to score can be anything. This hole is a perfect example of it. It's a drivable par 4. Can you drive it 300 yards to reach the green? Maybe you can. Maybe you can't. But here it is. Go for it. If you want to go for it, go for it. If you don't, if you want to lay up and hit a wedge in, go ahead. These are the kind of decisions that golf courses can do now. You want a 250-yard par 3? Great. Do that. I mean, you know, good luck.
Now, I might have missed it. Did Bryson DeChambeau use a 7-iron on the 16?
Yeah, that's a good question, right?
Because if he took out his driver, isn't he overshooting the hole by about 30 yards?
Oh, by a mile, yeah. He's like, oh, shoot, I airmailed that one. You know? Yeah,
I had it on 17. That was weird.
Yeah, can you imagine reaching a drivable par 4, hitting your driver and going, oh, that thing's gone. That thing's gone. It's gone. It's gone. It's gone. But they said, who was on the tee? Oh, gosh. I can't remember, but maybe it was Jason Day or somebody was on the tee on 17 when they saw the shot Morikawa hit and said, oh my God, that's unbelievable.
No chance.
It's unbelievable. Just, when a guy's doing that, it's like, you just watch the guy.
Let's just save face and just, you know, get out of here with a respectable score now.
Hit it like an iron, man. It landed and then just trickled towards the cup.
Yeah.
It didn't take that crazy bounce like drivers do. Just landed, took a kick, and then trickled towards the cup. 7 feet.
Maybe it was an iron disguised as a driver.
Maybe so. All right, coming up, the St. Louis Cardinals have not played in a long time. If you're Major League Baseball, what's the answer to the problem of the Cardinals? That's coming up as we continue Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, so another series canceled by Major League Baseball for the St. Louis Cardinals. Their weekend series against the Cubs has been postponed. I say canceled, but really postponed. I'm going back and forth with that terminology because I gotta be honest with you. I have no idea when these games are.
I think you meant it this way. Postponed, but really canceled.
Yeah, like when are they going to make these games?
They're going to start playing triple header soon.
Yeah, they need to play 55 games in like 42 days to make up the games that have been canceled or postponed.
Well, that's not even counting what's to come.
Right. It's all coming.
That's if they were able to play today.
So they've got a series with the Pirates that starts today. That's been postponed. Yep. So they have not played since July 29th. Right? So here's the deal. Here's the central standings right now. The Cubs lead it at 10-3. They played 13 games. Milwaukee has played 13 games. Cincinnati has played 16 games. Pittsburgh has played 16 games. The St. Louis Cardinals have played 5. They played 5. They're 2-3. They have not played again since July 29th. Now, if you're Major League Baseball and you've got Lane Thomas, one of their players, has just contracted coronavirus because his roommate, Ryan Hensley, he had coronavirus. And Yadier Molina had coronavirus. And Colton Wong had coronavirus. And they had an outbreak of 13 players/people in the organization contract coronavirus. They were on the road for a series against Milwaukee. That got postponed. Then they were splitting a couple of games with Detroit. That got postponed. They had a weekend series at Busch Stadium against the Cubs this weekend. That got postponed. Now they have 3 games against Pittsburgh starting today through Wednesday. That's got postponed. What's the next game on the schedule for them? At Detroit coming up on the 13th, which is what, Thursday? That is still very much in doubt. Now, if you're baseball, here's the thing. Baseball's rolling along right now. There's been a few trouble spots. St. Louis is one of them. Miami's one of them. But most of these teams are getting the games in. Most of the games are going on just fine. We're getting walk-off home runs like the Red Sox had yesterday. We're getting Ronald Acuna Jr. hit 3 in a doubleheader. You know, you're getting Tampa Bay had a walk-off, 2-out walk-off RBI single from Michael Perez. They beat the Yankees. I mean, the Mets won yesterday. Baseball's rolling along. But it's got a problem, and it's got this baseball team that has got five games under its belt and a coronavirus situation that's not out of control, but not in control, because they just can't safely put a product on the field, even though they've expanded the roster. So what do you do if you're Rob Manfred? At what point, and let me ask this, and in all fairness to everything that the St. Louis Cardinals are as an organization, and I'm not blowing them off, and I'm not saying they don't matter. They matter. This is one of the great baseball towns in America. In a time where baseball towns, where baseball is the singular focus, we don't have very many of them because usually that town is married to some football team. But in the case of St. Louis, that's not the case. Even when they had the Rams, they were one of the best baseball cities in America. Can Major League Baseball afford to say to the Cardinals, "We're sorry, that's it. There's nothing we can do. We have to remove you from the season. All your games against your opponents, those opponents, we'll match them up in some capacity, like the Tigers series and the Pirates series. And we'll just play the Pirates and the Tigers and the Pirates together so you can make up some games missed by not playing you." How far does Major League Baseball take this to the point of letting the Cardinals finish out the season? Or is any action really required? Do you just say to the Cardinals, "We're going to try to get as many games as in as possible. If we cancel 55% of them because we couldn't make them up, so be it." If you're Manfred, you got two options here. You can panic a little bit and say, "Look, we got to shut down the Cardinals and redo their schedule," meaning take the games that they're not going to be a part of, take the opponents, and then figure out a way to manipulate the missed games for everybody they were supposed to play, batch them together, and get some games under the belt so that no team is losing out by missing out on the Cardinals. Or do you say, "You know what? Nobody. Is getting kicked out of this thing right now. I don't care what the coronavirus is doing. We will wait this out and we will play as many games as possible. And if you play 40 and everybody plays 60, so be it. If you play 30 and everybody plays 60, so be it." I don't know what Rob Manfred does. If he signals to the Cardinals, if he says to the Cardinals, "That's it. It has been too long. You do not have a team. You are struggling to put a product on the field. It is unsafe. Your players are all getting this virus. Everything that we're doing is not helping your situation. You continue to have outbreaks." Because this isn't just, they're not canceled. They're not postponing these games because of what happened initially. They're continuing to postpone games because players are still getting it. If you're Rob Manfred, you could send the big signal that we're doing something strong. Or you can say, "Look, we're going to hold back the panic because I don't want the wolves at the door," right? I mean, as soon as I tell a team they are no longer playing baseball, here come the media pundits. So if you're Manfred, what do you do? Because this is a serious situation. Again, this is not like we missed a series and then we're back. They haven't played since July 29th. That was like a Wednesday night. That's going on. That's going on, what, 2 weeks? I mean,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Can baseball do this? And I don't even know if you can do this. You know, I mean, just ban the Cardinals from any postseason play at all. But,
and then just try to get as many games
in. But just let them get as many games in so the other teams can play. But that, what if the Cardinals go on a hot streak and start beating everybody?
Right.
Then it's kind of unfair for the other teams. Because this is getting ridiculous. And what I love about it is that we still probably look at the Marlins as the instigators.
Yeah, probably, right?
You know, as the bad guys. And we don't look at the Cardinals at all. And, I mean, I still really don't know if the rumors of them going to a casino are true.
Right, but still, I mean.
But, I mean, it's a serious issue. And I think what the larger issue is, and some of that football, NFL needs to really take a look at. I know they have protocols in place. But what it really looks at is, like, you know, look at the NBA. The bubble works.
And the bubble is working in both hockey and in the NBA.
Yeah, and I don't know how you bubble any.
I don't think you can.
I don't know if you can bubble the NFL. You could have bubbled the Major League Baseball.
You could have done something. I mean, you could have put something together. And but again, the players' union didn't want that, right? The players' union wasn't going to go up for that. So you gave everybody what they wanted here. The players said, "Look, we're not going to be away from our families for 4 months. We're not playing in Arizona at some spring training complex with four diamonds like a little league field. We're not going to do that. So we're not going to bus ourselves to a hotel. All right, but this is what you get. Now, here's the deal. I don't mind if the I don't mind if teams can't get all get in 60. But when I say that, I mean, can you get in 55? Because if the St. Louis Cardinals get in 30, no, that doesn't count. They're done. They can't compete for the postseason. We'll talk some college football, and is it on life support? Next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio Network. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Hey, one of the biggest changes we're all dealing with is wearing a mask. Some of you don't like it. I know. I get it. Not all, though, offer the same comfort and protection. I recommend Boomer Naturals three-layer comfortable and highly breathable masks. I had to wear mine all week, and we went shopping yesterday when all these stores had to run around town as we get ready to send my kid off to college. We had to buy some last-minute things for the boxes. Wear the mask all day, and let me tell you, it was extremely comfortable and breathable, too, which is I absolutely love. They come in sizes for all adults, teens, and children, and they're in stock now, shipping to you fast. But one of the reasons that I love Boomer Naturals is highly protective nano-silver technology that's woven into the fabric and can block the tiny drops and particles from getting to the nose and mouth, and that's what we're all looking for, best protection. Boomer also offers those popular nano-silver neck gaiters. So order now at BoomerNaturals.com and use the promo code Tony to save 20%. What a deal. That's promo code Tony at BoomerNaturals.com. Get free shipping and handling when you spend at least $50 online at BoomerNaturals.com. Another great thing, Boomer donates one face covering for every order to nonprofits and charities, helping tens of thousands of Americans in need. All right, one other point before we get to college football about the Cardinals real quick is, as I was saying to close it out, I just wanted to clarify. Look, I know no one is going to play 60 games. Not everyone's going to play 60 games. And Major League Baseball has already said that. Like, look, the winning percentage is what's going to matter here in terms of getting into an expanded postseason. But I seriously would have a problem if the Cardinals played 35 games and everybody was playing near 60. Some teams are going to play complete 60. Some are going to get 55 in. Some are going to get 57 in. Some maybe 52. But if the Cardinals end up with 30, I honestly don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. I don't know if you can tell the Cardinals with a good winning percentage that they have to stay home from the postseason if they've only played half the schedule. But it would make a little sense if that was the case. And we're heading into that direction. If I'm on the Cardinals, I'm not playing 55 games in 42 days. All right, I'm not doing that. So I'm like, I will talk to my union rep, but I will not be playing that many games over a 42 stretch plan. I need some days off, and I'm not playing a doubleheader every day for a week. We are no chance, absolutely no chance. And I don't even care if our roster is equipped to handle me having days off and me taking time away. Whatever it is, I'm not. Our team should not be playing doubleheaders to try to make up all of the games baseball wants to cancel constantly. And it has been like that for 2 weeks now. I mean, a series against Milwaukee, Detroit, the Cubs, and now the Pirates have all been shut down. They have not played since July 29th. All right, so college football is on life support. My God, what a weekend this was. So the MAC canceled its football season, and now there was a buzz that was going on that the Power Five conferences were all having a conversation about whether they should cancel the season. Which, I'll be honest with you, was really surprising to me, because here's why. Look, I have a lot of respect for the MAC. It's a fine conference. It's got some good competitive teams in there that are fun to watch from a MAC-level standpoint. But the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 should not be dictating their season whether of what the MAC is going to do. I mean, Ball State, Central Michigan, Northern Illinois, Ohio, Buffalo, Toledo. These are the schools that the SEC is going to take direction from? What, are you kidding me? I mean, you think Florida and Ohio State and Texas are looking at the MAC and going, oh my God, If the SEC, the Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, and Pac-12, if they all want to cancel their season, there better be a better reason behind it in terms of really looking at the raw data in terms of safety, looking at the economic value of it, looking at whether logistically it should work out, rather than taking the max word for it that football shouldn't be played in the fall. There's a couple of things here that I want to state. One, again, like with the UConn situation, There's a scheduling problematic with the MAC that makes a little bit of sense as to why they shut down their season. Now, they could have gone conference only, too. But remember, these are schools that also get paid a lot of money to be kicked around a little bit by some big-name programs. Hey, Kent State, come play us here at Clemson, and we'll give you $1 million. These schools do that. They do that sometimes twice a season to build up their athletic budget. All right, so when those games get canceled, and then you look at the logistics of whether or not you're going to have some fans, and if you do, how much revenue is generated from that, and all, is the TV revenue even worth it to try to come up with a plan to play football? Now, listen, I'm not diminishing the fact that you can have the presidents and the athletic directors all sitting down and discussing the safety issue of it, of course. It's not just economics. I don't think what the UConn situation was 100% economics. But I do think that their inability to get games rescheduled had a lot to do with their decision. But it also doesn't mean they're not sincere when they say they care about their student athletes, that they wonder about whether or not this COVID is going to affect certain players on the team. I mean, we talk about young people, and it's true, right? Young people get it and they recover, right? That's been the case. But we're also talking about unique young people when it comes to a college football team, right? I mean, has anybody wondered how a 365-pound offensive lineman is going to handle COVID? Or a 300-pound defensive end is going to handle COVID? I mean, it's one thing when you look at the slim, trim, athletic quarterback slash wide receiver running back and say, well, they're really healthy. Look at them. And they've got a resting heart rate of 58, right? Well, it's another thing to look at a guy that does have a hard time breathing when his heart rate goes up because he plays offensive tackle and he's 360 or 340. I mean, I would be concerned. So I'm not saying that the schools aren't being insincere and just going after dollars that, and then saying, well, the dollars aren't there, so none of this is going to happen. But I also do think it's a factor. And in the MAC case, both of these things can be accurate, right? The MAC could have made a business decision and also a safety decision. But when I was going through this weekend and I was seeing people saying college football is days away from canceling everything because of what the MAC did, like, where's this coming from? Now, don't doubt. I know that university presidents and commissioners are in discussions right now. But how did this conference, this Mid-Atlantic conference, how are they dictating the future of college football? When college football conferences don't have to answer to any governing body other than themselves. If the SEC wants to be the only conference in college football to play a season, they can. If the Pac-12 and the SEC are the only two conferences that want to play football, they can. They don't need the Big Ten. They don't need the Big 12. I was talking to my brother-in-law over the weekend. He's a Florida Gator alumni. We were talking about whether or not football would exist. And I said, listen, I'm at 50-50 now. I'm tossing a coin in the air. Like, it's Friday, I was 80% sure we were going to have a season under the new sort of protocols. Now I have no idea. I mean, no idea. But I said to him, look, we've got to go back to at least this season. We should just go back to the old days. We should go back to when you played to go to a particular bowl game and that was what you strived for, and that was like the Cotton Bowl or the Sugar Bowl, but make it the conference championship game. The SEC should play 10 conference games. It's conference championship game, and that's it. No college football playoff, no committee, no nothing. Just get it over with. Just sit, crown these conference championship champions and move on. And just say, look, we can give you some of this, but not all of this. Right? Because I have no idea what the Pac-12 is going to look like, or the Big 12 or the SEC is going to look like after 10 games. And I don't want a playoff to be manipulated somehow because of it. I mean, what if Clemson's the number one team in the country all season long, and at the end they're stricken with coronavirus in late November? Let the conferences sort that out. So the ACC would say, well, Clemson, you had a really good year, but you can't play in the conference championship game because you have no more team. So we're, you know, that's just the way a conference is going to do it. It doesn't affect the SEC. It doesn't affect the Big 12. It doesn't affect anybody. I'd just rather it be like that, tidy it up, move on, and then get out of here. Believe me, I would love a college football playoff. I'd love the two games. I'd love the national title. But this year, it's okay. It's okay if they said, nah, we're just conference champions and move on. Get out of here and be done with it. Because at this point, I have no idea if I'm even going to have college football this year.
It's looking like we're not.
It's really looking like we're not. And can I just
Actually, we'll probably have it in the SEC. Looks like they're going to play college football no matter what.
They're going to hold on to the very end, man. The very end. They're going to be the last one.
I mean, they're
the last one standing.
They have their, I don't think it's aired yet, but they have a televised show for their final two, who the two random opponents are going to be.
Oh, yeah, 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 exactly.
That's going to be televised. That's SEC football
for you. It's weird, and it's weird because some of my friends who cover SEC football around the South, I mean, that's like their podcast slash Twitter feed slash article on their website, like like how to Florida avoids Alabama, gets Arkansas and Texas, like little things like that where you're like, okay, we're talking sports, we're not talking about shutdowns, we're talking about scheduling, how this is gonna, you know. So but let me make one other point about the media, because this is another thing that's been driving me crazy. Look, we, you know, you've been in this, if you've been in this business a long time, it's a very, it's a, feels like a big world, but it's really small. You end up getting to know guys and you end up getting to know people really well, especially a guy like me. It's bounced around the country. I've done radio in all sorts of cities. I don't think anybody is rooting for college football not to be played. I don't think Dan Wolken, for example, who we've had on the show a number of times, is quietly rooting for football not to be played. He may not want it to be played because of safety concerns. In his mind and in his world, he may see the folly in this plan. But I don't think he's rubbing his hands going, oh, I can't wait for college football to get canceled. We make our living on doing this. Like, the guys make their, this is what they do. Like, Dan Wolken writes about college athletics. I don't think he doesn't want to see those games. I've seen Dan in press boxes when he covered the Air Force Falcons, and he talks college football all the time. He loves college football. He will have an argument or a debate with a colleague next to him about the validity of Nebraska. Right? I mean, that's what he does. I don't think he's looking at his sport that he covers and covers, you know, on a daily basis and says, oh, I hope to God it's all shut down. I don't think a lot of people in the media are rooting for it. I think what they're saying is they may not be as on board with the comfortability of playing as other people are. There are some media members that just want this because for personal entertainment or because they want it. And there are some in the media that are looking at it and saying, look, like I just said earlier, I don't want some offensive linemen to die from this virus, so I don't really think it should be played. Both sides have got some validity to it, but it doesn't mean that we have to shun the media members that are saying, hey, hold on, can we take a look at this again? Like, these are kids, right? With, like, parents sending their kids to college, whether it's to play football or study chemistry. We don't want to put them in situations where they're going to die. And if your kid is set 360 pounds and he is a big, strong offensive tackle, right? He may have heart problems from this, right? He might not be able to breathe because of this. So let's slow down a little bit and really make sure we're not putting a whole bunch of people at risk. I think that's fine. I think it's fine to have those conversations. I think it's fine to say what are the proper, are the safety protocols worth it? Is the quarantine worth it? Is, what are you exactly doing? I think this is not rooting for or rooting against. I think it's people who love college football and don't want to see it destroyed. Because I'll tell you right now, if this sport in 2020, if it plays, let's say there are 40 deaths across college football because of it, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt not only from an emotional standpoint of losing those athletes, but people are going to really start asking some serious questions about the people behind the scenes. And it'll be scandalous, and it'll be political, and it'll be bad. It'll be really bad for the sport, and it will not be forgotten. It'll not go away. If you have 40 to 50 student athletes in every single conference and every single level of college football die from the virus, and maybe that's high, I don't know. But it will never be forgotten, ever. and the sport will be tarnished for it. And I don't think people want to see it. I don't think people would rather take a year off than not have that on their conscience or on the in the history of the sport. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue at Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So, Mr. Culver, where would you put the on the scale 50-50 where college football is going to be played this year?
Oof.
Well, like I said, I'm leaning like 30-70 that it's that
yeah.
It's going,
I mean,
I think
the SEC goes on. Then there were also other rumors that a couple Big Ten teams were going to join the Big 12.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, just because there might not be football in the Big Ten. I don't even know. Is that even allowed?
So weird. See, the SEC does have that ability to go, nah, we're playing. Everybody else, you don't have to play. But I wonder if everybody else cancels, do they feel pressure to go, all right, let's cancel too. Like, we don't want to be the only ones playing.
They don't want to be the ones stand out.
Right.
I mean, I have a feeling, I mean, you know, yeah, the MAC was the first, you know, Big Ten, what, is making a decision sometime this week.
Right. They're making decisions.
Pac-12, I think, will closely follow.
I just didn't know how quick, like, to me, and this is how fast the weekend went. Like, I went, like, Friday, I was like, we're going to have college football. It's going to look weird, but, like, starting so late, but we're going to have it. And then the MAC cancels, and then all of a sudden there's meetings, there's emergency meetings on Sunday amongst power discussing this. I went, wait a minute, that was quick.
And you have every college football writer going, yeah, it doesn't look like there's going to be a football season this year.
Yeah, I know. Everybody was,
inside sources going, okay, come on, guys, stop.
I talked to four ADs, and they all said college football is going to get canceled. But none of them wanted to be on the record. That's how fast that news cycle went this weekend. That's how quick it went from, yeah, we'll have it, to, I don't know if we'll even have it. Just because of the Mac. Thanks, Mac.